Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome back. Great to have you with us. Zach Helfand from the LA Times is going to join us in just a few moments to talk about USC. He's the beat writer for the Los Angeles Times for USC football. But before we get to that, our play-by-play call of the day, and this is a touching one. Notre Dame's basketball game the other night. I want to tell you, Farrell, the point guard for Notre Dame, is really good. I had a good long look at his game when Notre Dame played Villanova 10 days ago, and man, I was impressed. Dick and I commented several times that, you know, as much as we like Steve Vasturi, who was really good, we were really impressed by how Farrell played and the tempo with which he played and how he shot the ball. Well, at home on Monday night, this great moment took place.
All the way from Afghanistan, from Bo Farrell, the older brother of point guard Matt Farrell.
4th Squadron, 3rd Cavalry Regiment, here at OB Fenty in Jalalabad, Afghanistan. This is 1st Lieutenant Bo Farrell, wishing Notre Dame a very Merry Christmas. Congrats on the win, and go Irish. Mom and Dad, I love you, and I miss you very much. Maddie, I've been watching you tonight from here, and I can hear Jack Nolan call your name. And just remember when we used to play around when we were kids, everybody called you Squirrel. You've always followed your hopes and always followed your dreams. And I just want you to know how proud I am of you. I love you, and I miss you very much. For us, home is wherever we're together. And I look forward to being home with you soon. Really, really soon.
And then he walks out onto the court. He's actually there at the Joyce Center. And Matt Farrell and his brother Bo embracing on the court in just a beautiful brother-to-brother moment. And then Mom and Dad are there, and they embrace. They can't believe he is back from Afghanistan. It's just one of the really great, cool moments that happened. What they did was is they set him up in uniform, an American flag behind him, okay? So it looked like he was in Kabul at the time, standing in front of the American flag and taping this. Well, it turns out when he's done and makes his and says all of this, what he does is he then steps away from the American flag, and you see the backdrop of Notre Dame, and he walks out of the tunnel onto the court, and his brother Matt is standing there in absolute disbelief. A great, great moment. Part of what the holidays are all about. Zach Helfand joins us now. He is the beat writer for USC football for the Los Angeles Times. Zach, welcome. We've been going through snow, some sleet. We've had temperatures in the single digits here this week. Exactly how are things in LA right now?
You know, it rained yesterday.
What?
It's a little cloudy today. It's in the 60s. It's very nice. But it rained. I got a little wet when I went outside yesterday. That's not supposed to happen here.
Zach, that's appalling. All right.
It's appalling. I agree.
It is appalling. When they made the move from Max Brown, whom Penn State fans will now see in Beaver Stadium next year as a member of the Pitt football team, when they made the move from Max Brown to Sam Darnold, what did that do to USC football?
It did everything. The team has improved a lot across the board, not just at quarterback and not just on the offense. But at the time, they were 1-2. They lost Darnold's first game. A lot of it was probably because it was his first start that they lost that. So they were 1-3 after that. And this was a USC program that had just been through a lot of nonsense over the last few years. And they were in trouble. They were in jeopardy of going off a cliff, kind of just everything falling apart. I think if they lost another game, they would have, you know, the season would have been much different. So the change, especially when they did it, it did everything. Darnold immediately made the offense much, much more dynamic, much more dangerous. He overhauled that offense completely. And the defense improved a lot along the way. But I think without that quarterback change, it's a lot different season.
When I've watched the tapes, and I've watched two of them so far in my research getting ready for this one, he is highly accurate, but doesn't seem like a huge risk taker. Is that fair?
Yeah, he's got this kind of reputation building as a gunslinger type, you know, like a Brett Favre or, you know, all those other guys you attribute the term gunslinger to. I don't know if that's necessarily too accurate.
I see a lot of safe throws over the middle with some yards after the catch, and he leads guys into the yards after the catch. I think he's really, really good, but I don't get the gunslinger mentality.
Yeah, I think maybe it comes. He likes to scramble around a lot and extend plays.
Yeah, he's good.
But that's not, to me, not a risk. That's just an attribute that you have if you could extend plays and then make throws after that. He doesn't have many interceptions. So yeah, he's got a big arm. He's accurate. He leads guys. And I think the most impressive thing about him is his decision making. He makes reads, especially for a freshman. He makes reads and gets rid of the ball so quickly, and it's usually the right decision.
Juju Smith-Schuster has obviously been the go-to guy in recent years for USC. Did Darnold do a better job, though, of spreading out the wealth among everybody?
Yes, yeah, he did. Last year with Cody Kessler as the quarterback, Juju Smith was targeted on, I think it was about one-third of every target, including to the running backs, including the tight end.
Right.
It was one-third of every pass was going to Juju Smith-Schuster. Which makes sense because he's a very good receiver, but Darnold has found guys like Darius Rogers, the number two quarterback. He spread it out to the running backs. I think the most, maybe not most impressive, but the best thing he's done is get the tight ends involved. He's got a talented young tight end named Daniel Emater Bebe. I'm impressed with myself that I said that correctly.
I got to give you credit. You just helped me out because I'm going to have to say it probably several times that day.
Yeah. Emater Bebe. I've been saying it all year, so I've had a lot of practice. Yeah. But he's gotten him involved. He doesn't have a lot of receptions, but he finds them for long gains and for touchdowns a lot. So he's really gotten everyone involved. There was one, I think it was against UCLA, they had 11 receivers, 11 different pass catchers catch the ball from Darnold. He spreads it around. Pretty much whoever's open, he's going to find.
When I went out to speak to Penn State groups this year, and I was discussing what Penn State has had to overcome. And I've always gone back to USC explaining the parallel paths the two programs have been on going through the sanctions. And the trivia question I used was, we know that Christian Hackenberg the last 3 years was sacked 103 times, more than anybody in the country. Who was second? And everybody, of course, they don't know the answer. You don't expect them to know the answer. The answer was 100 times Cody Kessler.
Really?
Yes.
I would not have guessed that he would have been the second most.
100, only three behind Hackenberg in the same period of time. Now, I know he has a tendency to hold the ball a little bit, but has the USC offensive line improved that much?
I would say it's been half Darnold and half the offensive line. The offensive line is very good. They're very talented. They have two tackles who are going to be draft picks, potentially pretty high draft picks. Probably not first round for either of them, but two talented tackles. They have a center who went in there in the middle of the year and has been very impressive. And they have two talented guards. Across the board, they're pretty good. Their problem hasn't been talent so much as I think the reason why you see that Kessler has been sacked 100 times was because this is for the fifth year seniors on the line, this is their fifth offensive line coach that they've had since
Wow.
they've been here. They've had no
Wow.
stability. So I think it's not so much talent. They've been able to get the talent. It's the depth that they're going against in practice, and it's just a lack of stability. And I think more so than any position other than quarterback, the offensive line, you want to have a stable system and a stable coaching staff to be able to work together. And so this year, I mean, you see Darnold's only been sacked five times.
Right.
I think that's half is Darnold is hard to take down because he's big and he's elusive and has good pocket presence, but also because he hasn't been getting that much pressure on him because mm-hmm. The line has been pretty good too.
Right. USC has a great legacy of tailbacks. How good's Ronald Jones?
He's pretty good. It'll be interesting to see how he does in the bowl game, because he started off the year not so good. He's kind of a guy that needs to get into a rhythm. Once he's in the rhythm, and by that I mean he just in the beginning of the year he was impatient. He was trying to hit home runs every play and just wasn't waiting for the plays to develop so much. And part of that was because he was the second stringer at that point and wasn't getting regular reps. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious to see after this layoff, after about a month off, if he continues the rhythm that he had lately in the season, or if he kind of reverts back to the impatience that he had earlier in the season. Because when he's on, he's fast, he's explosive. He breaks tackles. He's legit when he is on and in rhythm. But he has been at times a little bit streaky, I guess we could say.
Okay, up front, the Utah transfer, Stevie Tuikolovatu.
Tuikolovatu.
I was close.
All right. Not bad.
How good?
I mean, he's been really impressive. You look at the Washington game, I think was his most impressive game.
Yes.
I don't know if he had the amazing stats that game, but watching that game, he was 3, 4, 5 yards deep into the backfield almost every play. And it really disrupted everything that Washington was trying to do. And Washington's a very good team with a very good offensive line, and he was just bullying them. He's a big guy. He's an older guy. He's 25. He's married. He was on a 3-year mission when he was at Utah, and he's also a redshirt. So he's older and bigger and stronger than a lot of these guys. I think he's a guy who's going to play in the NFL, even though, you know, he's got the age that the NFL does. They'd rather a younger guy, but I think he's good enough. He's shown that he's going to be an NFL type guy. He's just so disruptive in there, and USC is so lucky to have him, because they didn't have many options at defensive tackle other than him, and he's really their one older, mature, experienced guy. He's been a godsend for them.
How good's Cameron Smith been? And then how tough off the edge is Porter Gustin?
Cameron Smith is just really, really solid. Last year, he kind of came to national prominence, or at least regional prominence, because he had 3 interceptions against Utah, and 3 interceptions for anyone, much less a linebacker, is really impressive.
Right.
He hasn't had a game like that. I'm probably wrong. I'm not going to have a game like that in his career again. But he's just really solid. You don't see him making mistakes very often. And Porter Gustin has been a guy that's improved a lot as the years have gone on. But both of USC's edge rushers, Echena Nwosu and Porter Gustin. Again, if you look at that Washington game, Washington's a team that loves to get outside, loves to stretch the field, loves to use some speed. And they couldn't get anything against USC. I think they had 17 rushing yards against USC. And a lot of that was because they would try to stretch the outside, and USC just had more speed than them. And that was because of Porter Gustin and Echena Nwosu, who have matured really nicely on the outside. They're both athletic, talented guys, but they've learned kind of how to play within the system, and now they could use their speed and not have to think so much. And that's been a blessing for USC on the outside.
Adoree Jackson's primary job is to be the Thorpe Award winner on the corner. So let's break this into 2 parts. What makes him a really good corner? And then we'll flip it to the other side. What makes him an awesome return guy?
Okay, let me start out by saying this. Adoree Jackson is a very, very good cornerback. I was a little surprised he won the Thorpe Award because I think he almost had a better candidacy for the Heisman. Or for another type of those all-around, more versatile, right, whatever it might be.
Yeah, people don't realize he has 17 career touchdowns. That's an amazing stat for a guy that's a junior that doesn't play a lot of offense.
Right. He's a very, very good cornerback and an amazing all-around player. I don't think he was the best cornerback, just pure cornerback in the country. He did get picked on a little bit late against Washington. John Ross had a long touchdown against them. Mm-hmm. UCLA, he let up 2 touchdowns. Notre Dame, he also let up a touchdown. He wasn't flawless late. He was very good, and he was guarding the best receivers on the other team. But the thing that makes him a good cornerback is his speed. He could get beat sometimes, but you have to throw it perfectly to beat him. And quarterbacks did that in the last few games, and they beat him. But if you give him a split second to catch up, he's a world-class sprinter. He almost made the Olympics as a long jumper. If you give him a little bit of daylight to catch up, he's going to catch up. That's the same thing that makes him a good kickoff and punt returner. He's so fast. He's just an incredible all around athlete. I think you could plug him into almost any sport. He would have been a great baseball player if he pursued that. Yeah. He played basketball a little bit. He played soccer and was good at it. He was, like I said, he was almost made the Olympics as a long jumper. He's just an incredible athlete. So if you give him a little bit of daylight, he's learned now how to follow his blockers, and he knows where to go. Any little mistake, he's going to jump on, and he has the speed just to break it wide open.
At times, was Marshall actually a little bit better at the other corner?
Yeah, he has. If you look at the numbers between with him and Adoree aren't there's not a huge gap between them. I know Adoree's guarding the best receivers most of the time. The problem with Amon Marshall has been penalties. He's gotten better this year, but there were holding pass interference penalties seem to follow him around. But he has improved. He hasn't given up many big chunks of yardage since the beginning of the year. Mm-hmm. He's a guy who's kind of quietly improved and gotten better and has been a strength for USC.
How do you view this matchup with Penn State, Zach?
They're very similar teams in a lot of ways. I think you look at the coaches and just their trajectories this season, especially. You look at the sanctions, and this is the first year or two for both teams that they're back at full strength. You look at the improvement. Look at the quarterbacks. Clay Helton was saying yesterday that he views Trace McSorley as very similar to Sam Darnold. They both like to run around. They both have good vision. They both don't make a lot of mistakes, and they both improved a lot. I think they're very similar. I think right now USC has a little bit more talent. USC normally has more talent just because of where they are and their recruiting base. But I think the difference to me defensively is I think USC has a little bit more speed. It's tough to tell until they're on the same field. I think if you're USC, you're scared a little bit by Barkley. Because they haven't seen a running back like him since Christian McCaffrey, really. And McCaffrey's always given USC trouble. I think the thing you like if you're USC is you have Darnold. And I think McSorley has been great, especially in that championship game. But Darnold, I haven't seen a quarterback that he's played. Every quarterback that he's played this season, he's played some good ones. He's outplayed. I think that's not a surprise to a lot of people who see him day in, day out. I think he's one of the best quarterbacks in the country. I think that there are a lot of similarities, very close. To me, I think with this being kind of a USC home game, they have a little bit of an advantage there. But I'm really excited for this game. Two hot teams, two very good teams right now, two storied franchises, programs. I'm excited for it.
Zach, an absolute pleasure. Look forward to seeing you out there.
Thanks for having me on.
Zach Helfand from the Los Angeles Times. Great to have him on the show today, giving us a perspective on USC and how their journey took them to the Rose Bowl. In fact, the last time USC played in the Rose Bowl was when Penn State was there, the 2009 Rose Bowl game. That took place 8 years ago. It's been interesting, the parallel journeys for Penn State and USC, and I've referenced it many, many times on this show. As I pointed out to Zach in talking with him over the previous three seasons from 13, 14, 15, which quarterback was sacked more than any other in the country? It was Christian Hackenberg 103 times in the 3 years. Who was second? Cody Kessler of USC 100 times. And I've talked many times about the offensive lines, which has been a staple for USC football for years. The number of offensive linemen they put into the NFL is remarkable, just like the number of offensive linemen Penn State's put into the NFL has been remarkable over the years. Well, that's an area that suffered on both teams as they've gone through their respective sanctions. And the records of the two programs really have been relatively similar over the last few years. No real change one way or the other. Neither team got under 500, but they've all been hovering in that 7-6, 8-5 range like that. And then USC started out this year 1-3, and Penn State started 2-2. Penn State ran off 9 straight wins. USC ran off 8 in a row. So it's amazing the parallel paths that the two programs have taken in recent years and now how it's taken them to the same spot again, and that is the Rose Bowl in Pasadena. Penn State is the home team of the game based on the fact that they're the fifth-ranked team in the country, so they'll wear the blue jerseys. It also means that the Penn State Blue Band this time around will be the group that will play the national anthem on the field because Penn State is the higher-ranked team. And instead of a B-2 bomber, I think a B-52 is doing the flyover before the game this year. And, of course, the three Olympians will be the honorary captains, or excuse me, they're the grand marshals, and they'll be the ones that will have the coin toss before the game. There's so much great pomp and circumstance that goes with this in an idyllic setting that is really second to none. There's just something special about this, and to get back there again is remarkable. All right, Todd Blackledge coming up in the next half hour as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you, the other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome back. Time now for the sports bozo of the day. And this would go to actually a series of writers across the country because Deshaun Watson was talking the other day about, I think I'm the best player in the country. And it became a story. Why is that a story? Why is that even worthy of mention? Of course he thinks he's the best player in the country. Why wouldn't he think he was the best player in the country? Deshaun Watson, when he was in New York for the Heisman Trophy, talked about how incredible it was to be in the same company as other great players. He talked about how great everybody else was. And by all accounts, didn't talk one time about himself. Never. Talked about his teammates, talked about Dabo Swinney, talked about the other four Heisman finalists. Never talked about himself. And by all accounts, is said to be a very humble guy. So in whatever question that came up, and he's made some comment about, I think I'm the best player in the country. Suddenly, I'm looking at websites. It becomes a headline of websites. What do you want him to say? I'm not? Oh, you want him to say that? Everybody, whatever job they're doing, should have the confidence that they're the best person for that job. I don't care if you're working over at Wise. I don't care if you're working over at Sunbury Motors or Sunbury Motors Kia, or if you're working at Geisinger or you're working at WKOK. Right? Every person should feel like they are the best person for that job. That's why you have that job. Because you're considered to be the best person for that job. And that's what he's saying here. Nothing more, nothing less. In a 24/7 turnaround, we're constantly putting meaningless, worthless headlines out there and making stories out of things that aren't stories. And to me, that does make it the bozo of the day. Easily. A guy that would never be in that category. Ever, because he brings professionalism, perspective, and intelligence to the job and looks at the audience as being intelligent. So there's no need to talk down to the audience. He's talking with the audience all the time. That's what makes him one of the best analysts in all of football. Former Nittany Lion, Todd Blackledge. Todd, as always, it's great to hear you on the other end. It's a privilege for us to have you on the show.
Yeah, it's good to be with you, Steve.
All right. The obvious first question is, four teams have made the playoff, Washington, Clemson, Ohio State, Alabama. In your opinion, did the committee get it right?
Well, I think that Penn State was maybe more deserving of the fourth spot instead of Ohio State, just because of the head-to-head, obviously, and being the conference champion, and for most of the season anyway, the argument was that the Big Ten was the strongest conference in college football this year. I think in some ways it was a little overstated, but I do think it was the strongest. And so, you know, I felt like the way they played down the stretch and with the head-to-head, that they were more deserving. Now, and I got misquoted on this a little bit already in my own hometown because I live right in the middle of Buckeye country. I'm not saying necessarily that Penn State is a better football team than Ohio State. I think Ohio State still in that league still has the best personnel top to bottom on both sides of the ball. The best depth and has recruited that way. But Penn State, there's no mistake how well they played down the stretch, and they did have the head-to-head victory. And if I would have been on the committee, that's how I would have picked it. But I knew how it was going to play out, and the way it played out is pretty much what I thought would happen. I don't think it would have been right for Ohio State and Penn State to be in, and a one-loss ACC champion Clemson or a one-loss Pac-12 champion Washington to be out either. So, it was just one of those years where, some tough decisions had to be made.
I know Jack Ham and I, when we had talked before the game, it played out about the way we thought. We thought that those would be the four that would get in, and we also thought that Penn State would then move ahead of Michigan because it looked like with Clemson jumping Ohio State and Penn State jumping Michigan, I felt like those were two, quote, face-saving moves. In other words, conference champion played an extra game, so you get to wear white jerseys instead of red.
Right. Yeah, I think that's probably what it was. And, the fact that they were idle and didn't play and kind of went back a notch. And I tried to say this to a lot of people, too. So before the announcement was made, yes, I thought Penn State had a legitimate position and an argument for them to be in the playoffs, even though I didn't think it was going to happen. But for them to now, to come off of 9 wins in a row, to recover from a 2-2 start, to go to the Rose Bowl, and to play who is arguably the other hottest team in college football when the season ended in USC, that's not too shabby. And certainly, everybody would have liked to have had a shot at the playoffs, but, I'm still a traditionalist, and there's no better game than the Rose Bowl, and that matchup is very, very exciting.
I agree with all of that. The next question will be, which is another obvious question, it's 4 right now. Should 8 be considered, or is 4 the right number?
I don't know. I mean, I think the 4 has been pretty good. I think it's a step up from where it's been. I think they'll always be clamoring for 8 or more. But I think that, if we've learned anything from the basketball tournament, that you can have 64 and still have argument and still have people that right. Think it should have gone a different way. So whether they go to 8 or not, there still is going to be, there's going to be a situation where somebody's not happy and there's some argument to be made, depending on how the season plays out. I do think it's a little unusual that we have 4 slots, but we have 5 major conferences, so therefore 5 conference champions, and the fact that one of those potentially is out every year, I don't know if that's the best setup that we can have.
What are your thoughts on Penn State getting back to this point, considering what they've had to go through with sanctions, scholarship reductions, then getting scholarships back?
Well, I think it's pretty remarkable. I really do. I think it started, I think, with Bill O'Brien and his couple years, and I thought, that he really did an outstanding job with what he had. I think it's continued with Coach Franklin and his staff, and he's always been known as a great recruiter, and I think that he's kind of proven himself in that, and they've gotten some of their depth back, and they're back up to the full complement of scholarships, and they have a couple special players now, so I mean that you know, Saquon Barkley's as good as anybody out there at the running back position, and the way McSorley played down the stretch in the new offense, and you know, the vertical passing game, I just thought was, you know, they were fun to watch. And you know, I watched three games. I watched them against Pitt earlier in the year, and saw that furious comeback fall short. But at that point, I knew McSorley was special from that game. And then watched them on film against Ohio State because I was preparing to do Ohio State, Michigan State, and you know, was impressed with some of the things they did in that. But they just continued to get better. And then I sat and watched the entire game Saturday night because my game was at noon, and you know, I was locked in to watch that one, and just an impressive win. And you know, as I'm sure a lot of Penn State people felt, you know, the fact that they were a great second half team aside, when it was 28-7, it didn't feel very good at that point. But they that touchdown they got right before the half was critical, and then they you know, just dominated the second half. So I was very impressed.
You have to go week to week, Todd, town to town. Some of them aren't the easiest to get to. How important is this time right now to recharge your batteries? How tired do you get by the time this is all said and done? Because it's been, what, 16, 17 straight weeks?
Yeah, you know, it's nice to have a break. I really don't feel worn down or run down because I'm basically preparing for one game a week. You know, I'm not bouncing around doing a bunch of stuff during the week early. I leave, you know, for a Saturday game, I leave on Thursday. I got a pretty consistent routine. It's been that routine for the last several years. And right now, you know, I get a nice break. One of the best things about the playoffs for me is you know, my crew, and it's in my contract to do one of the two semifinal games every year. And so I don't, you know, a lot of times before the playoffs, now is the time, okay, what bowl games am I doing? How many bowl games? What, you know, what do I have to do travel-wise? And it's made it very easy with the playoffs because I don't do anything up to up until then. And so I'm home until the 28th. I'll take off. You know, we have a basketball game the night of the 27th, and I'll fly out early the morning of the 28th and go do that game down in Atlanta between Alabama and Washington.
Of the teams that you saw in person this year, which couple impressed you of what you saw in person this year?
Well, so I saw all of them that are in the playoffs except Clemson. I did not see Clemson in person. You know, I saw them last year, obviously, and watched them on tape a little bit this year. Alabama's the most impressive. I saw them twice, saw them on tape a few more times. Defensively, they are just about as good as you know, they've ever been. They're different defensively than they've been in some other years, national championship years that they've had at Alabama. They're faster. Their linebackers are faster. They're still very stout in their defensive front. That's the strength of their team. They're a little different offensively because they're kind of playing to the skill set of their young quarterback. They're not invincible. You know, they do have some vulnerabilities in the back end of their defense, particularly with some of the injuries that they've had over the course of the season. But they are very, very good. And when teams make mistakes against them, they not only take the ball away from them, but in many cases they take it for scores. And that's, you know, so 14 non-offensive touchdowns for that team this year is a pretty remarkable number. Ohio State, I think they're better defensively than they are offensively. They're a very fast defense. They're a young defense that is going to be, you know, just continue to get better and better, I think. JT Barrett is, you know, he's not a great thrower, but he's a winner and a competitor. And, you know, whenever he's on the field, they have a chance. You know, I think he gives them a chance as a leader. Washington, I did have them early in a big win over Stanford at the time. I like their quarterback, Jake Browning. I like their, you know, a couple of their wideouts have got some speed on the outside. They're not, you know, they're not built the way a Big Ten team is or the way an Alabama team is. They're not as big and physical in the trenches. So that'll be an interesting matchup for them. And then Deshaun Watson with Clemson, I think he's the best player. You know, if you said out of those four teams, who's the best player on those four teams, Deshaun Watson is the best player. And And I think they've got a good defensive front, very fast, athletic defense. And Clemson's been kind of an odd team this year. When they got it going, they're as good as anybody. But they've been had times where they've been very inconsistent as well.
Yeah, agreed. You've worked for some great people, obviously. Brad Nessler, Vern Lundquist, and now Joe Tessitore. I know Vern Lundquist is now ending his SEC run, which was very emotional for him. What was it like working with him? Because I know when I met him, he just seems like the same guy off the air as he is on.
You know, I loved my 6 or 7 years with Vern, and I tell people all the time, the best way for me to describe it is I enjoyed every bit as much having dinner with Vern on Friday nights before games as I did working with him on Saturday because, you know, he's got so many stories and he's done so many things and he has so many experiences. And he's just a wonderfully nice man. And so he and I are very good friends and will remain good friends. And he was a real joy to work with. And I count it an honor that I got to work with him for, you know, part of his time there at the SEC and CBS.
Do you now know more about the Heisman Trophy voting by working one season with Joe Tessitore?
Oh, geez, yeah, that guy, man, he does a lot now. He's a relentless worker. He's a great great preparation guy. Really, really prepares well. And his whole Heismanology, which at first kind of bothered me only because, you know, I used to tell people I don't like to talk about, I hate preseason polls. I don't like talking about ranking any teams until the first week of October, and I don't like talking about the Heisman until the first week of November. Well, you know, with his stuff, he starts talking about a little earlier than that, but we figured out a way to make it work together, so it was okay.
Exactly. I have to ask you about Taste of the Town. It's in a book. You can also there's also multimedia of it. What inspired it to begin with, and then who came to you with the idea of the book?
Well, first of all, we're not doing it anymore. You know, we stopped it a couple years ago,
right.
It was we had a blast doing it. We did it for 7 years. It was my idea. We had a production meeting or a big meeting, college football meeting in the summer in Bristol, and so they had everybody that was there that had anything to do with college football. And it's kind of a rah-rah 2 days, and we usually hear from a lot of different speakers, a lot of bosses and stuff. And so one guy that spoke to us one day, he was challenging us to, you know, anything we could come up with, any kind of new ideas, new, you know, concepts, you know, don't be afraid to try things. And I can remember him saying, you know, there's nothing wrong with a noble failure. And, you know, so I came out of that meeting and I went to my producer at the time, Bo Garrett, and I said, look, Bo, I've been kind of sitting on this idea. I'd like to try it. Sounds great. So the first game, we did a Monday night Labor Day weekend game in Clemson. And I'd heard about this place in Clemson, a burger joint that, you know, is legendary, Max and Max Drive-In. And so we went and filmed it, and it was kind of rough. You know, the first one was a little rough, but we aired it. You know, didn't hear a whole lot about it, but it, you know, got pretty decent feedback. Well, then the next week, I think it was Penn State Notre Dame, and it was in State College. And so I said, well, I'm gonna go and, you know, highlight Sticky Buns. And so I went, and in 2 weeks after that, the thing took off. And everywhere I went from then, even to now, I haven't done Taste of Town for 3 years. And still, when I run into people that recognize me in the airport or on campus, they'll ask me, hey, where are you eating this week? You know, where's Taste of Town this week? So, I worked for 20 years to carve a niche as a football analyst, and now I'm more known as a food guy than anything else. But it was just, you know, it just really struck a nerve with people, I think. You know, people identified, you know, those kind of places with their college days and, you know, going to football games and going to those favorite kind of, you know, local places. And it just, you know, it just kind of hit the spot with people. And then the book was, you know, a couple people just approached me about maybe doing something, and we had a lot of fun doing that as well. You know, and the restaurants were so responsive and helpful in sending recipes, because it's ultimately a cookbook. You know, it's a little bit of a travel guide book and a cookbook combined, and you know, it worked, so it was fun.
I always enjoy every opportunity I get to talk to you very, very much. I appreciate the fact you gave us some time today, Todd, and so did the audience. Thanks so much.
My pleasure, man. And, you know, again, just congratulations to Coach Franklin and his staff and that team because, you know, it was a real proud moment for me to watch them the other night. And again, just knowing what the program has worked its way back from and to play as well as they did and to represent, you know, all of us, to represent the program, the university as well as they did, I just thought was terrific. So,
hey, thanks so much, Todd. Appreciate it.
Okay. See you, Steve.
Todd Blackledge, always great to hear him on the other end and have him on the show to give us his perspective. We appreciate it very much, along with Zach Helfand, who is the beat writer for USC football for the Los Angeles Times. If you missed either interview, check out the Steve Jones Show podcast. Coming up on tomorrow's show, we're going to concentrate on pro football because tomorrow it'll be the Philadelphia Eagles and the New York Giants. Thursday night football, Eagles and Giants. So Thursday night football finally gets a matchup that they've been aching to get. And that's a really good matchup, and also the fact that the Giants have played really well down the stretch, and the Eagles are always match up well with the Giants. So Dan Duggan, who is the beat writer for the New York Giants for NJ.com, is going to join us to give us the Giants' perspective tomorrow. Don't forget the Steelers coming up on Christmas Day at 4:30. It's on NFL Network. We'll take on the Baltimore Ravens at Heinz Field. Neil Coulong is going to join us on tomorrow's show as well. So we have a lot of pro football talk coming up on tomorrow's show that we're looking forward to very, very much. And don't forget, coming up tomorrow night, by the way, it'll be Princeton in action. We've got that coming up as well as they take on Bucknell. That's on Eagle 107. Penn State basketball this evening. They're taking on Morgan State at the Jordan Center. Of course, we've got Santa Claus coming up tonight. Santa will be here, Magic Radio, from 6 to 7. That time of the year. Youngsters excited. Suits excited. Same thing. All right. Great to have you with us on the show today. We're in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf on News Radio 1070 WKOK.